Are you looking for food truck books to read, but you're starting to feel overwhelmed with all the content? Or maybe you're trying to find answers to your questions, but you realize you haven't asked the right questions to get those answers. Well, you're in luck. I wrote the book, Before You Launch a Food Truck, 8 Questions Every Aspiring Food Trucker Should Ask. For the past 5 years, I have been studying the food truck industry and been a diehard food truck customer. And in the process of that, I've learned a lot about what makes a good food truck stand out among the rest. I took 8 of those key concepts and created a book where I could have curbside conversations with each of you about them. What makes this book different is not only that it's digestible and designed to not overwhelm you, but it also propels you into action. You can purchase Before You Launch a Food Truck today at thefoodtruckscholar.com/shop in paperback and ebook format, as well as on Amazon. For every copy purchased, I'm donating a copy to organizations committed to helping formerly incarcerated individuals re-enter society, particularly those that are interested in starting their own food business. So, buy a copy today to help yourself and someone else get rolling and keep trucking.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Food Truck Scholar Podcast. I'm your host, Ariel D. Smith, and I appreciate you for choosing to kick it with me for another episode. Make sure you share your thoughts about today's episode on social media using the hashtag TFTSPodcast. I'm excited because today's guest is none other than DeAndre Zachary, the owner of Raging Cajun Louisiana Kitchen Food Truck. As a former banking executive, DeAndre has helped countless individuals launch their dream business, and just 2 years ago, he decided to launch his own. This is an episode you do not want to miss because DeAndre covers it all, from discussing the food truck and concessions climate as a person of color, to common mistakes entrepreneurs make, and advice on how to choose your dream over materialism. DeAndre shares it all. I'm sure this episode will motivate you just as much as it motivated me. So sit back and relax. The show starts now.
So DeAndre, how about you introduce yourself, who you are and where you're from and how you got into the food truck business?
I am DeAndre Zachary. I am the elated owner of Raging Cajun Louisiana Kitchen. We are a food truck based out of Shreveport, Louisiana, but we have no borders. So we will be wherever we need to be. California, New York, Atlanta, we're all over the United States, but we are based out of Louisiana and we are a authentically Creole Cajun food truck where we do everything from scratch like your grandmother used to do. Happy to be with you all this morning. Thank you for the opportunity. And let's rock and roll.
So now let's break down a couple of things. Because you say you are borderless. That means that you can roll up here to West Lafayette, Indiana.
I will go wherever I need to go, wherever my client wants me to be. We are there. Yes, ma'am.
Listen, we need you up here because we only have literally in this town, it's a small town, but Purdue is a university that has like 40,000 people in it. They have like a good 8 or 9 food trucks in the area and they do not roll year round. So they only come out seasonally.
Probably due to the weather, I would imagine. I'm a part of a lot of food truck groups and I see food trucks in the northeast and northwest. Where heavily snow, some days they don't get to operate due to the weather. Traveling is of course dangerous on the highways with the food truck or a trailer, depending on what you're operating. So yeah, there are some limitations I would imagine due to the weather here in the South. Cold and rain are days that we generally don't operate because people don't want to stand out in the rain and cold and even no matter how good your food is. I just don't put my clientele through that struggle.
I feel that, but make your way up here because we need. There is not a black-owned food truck in West Lafayette that I've seen, and most definitely not Creole.
Sounds like there's some opportunity, and that's exactly. We'll talk, I'm sure, or I'll get to share a little bit later about my vision for this company.
Absolutely. You know, although I'm the food truck scholar, one of the things that bring me joy is actually seeing food truck owners grow and expand. So I'm looking forward to it. But in addition to that, I also want to hear your vision for getting me a supersized plate.
So you want a church plate? You want a church plate?
Absolutely. No cute plates allowed. I want a real adult plate. Nothing small. I want the full and all.
I got you. We definitely look forward to hosting you, and we appreciate the exposure that and the platform that you're bringing for minority food truck owners, African American food truck owners, and food truck owners in general. We definitely need the platform, the exposure. I think that the brick and mortar businesses are definitely taking notice and are feeling us. So we thank you and everyone that's helping to bring a food truck near everyone.
Well, man, I'm happy to do it because I don't know what it is about food trucks, but I love them. I love how colorful they can be. I love all of the different dishes y'all put out. They're just so creative and so innovative. And I love the hustle. Like, it takes somebody that is committed to be in a food truck when it's 95 degrees outside and God knows how hot it is on the inside, and you do
120.
It. 120. Woo! Mm-mm. No.
Yeah, try Louisiana in the summertime operating fryers. Like I say, if it's 95 outside my trailer, it's 120 on the inside. And we do our best. I mean, you know, of course, you know, perspiration and what have you. And it gets rough in there. I've got AC units and fans and everything. Of course, you know, noise is an issue with food trucks. You got generators and fans going. So. But we just appreciate the customer's commitment to supporting the food truck movement. And it's definitely a vibe, a movement going on across the United States. And we're just happy to be a part of it.
And, you know, you say the right word, movement, because at the end of 2017, the food truck industry was a $2.7 billion industry.
Ooh, I just want a piece.
I saw somebody say, I just want a crumb of this blessing.
And I said, right, just give me, look, let me get a sliver of the pie.
just a little corner. But yeah, like,
just, a little sliver. Yeah.
Just at the end of 2017, $2.7 billion. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they did the first ever report, national report, on food trucks in March of 2018. And if you ever want to see it, it's on my website, thefoodtruckscholar.com. I have the whole report there. And what I was realizing about that report is that it had, you know, some good points. It lets you know, like, what I think they did like 20 of the major food truck cities and was ranking them by like popularity, by permits, by ordinances, and like all these different type of things. But what really wasn't there was the nuances culturally, economically, politically in these spaces and how they kind of overlap. And so part of what my research does is try to talk more about those nuances because, yeah, you may have a city that's food truck friendly on paper, but how does that look across different income levels of food truck owners? How does that look across different cultures, different ethnicities? So that's part of what I do. And so I really thank you all because without you all, I would not be able to study this. And I would not be able to say, hey, I am studying while I eat.
Most definitely. And it's a point that you bring up as we are currently and have experienced. And I will say that as an African-American, I have not been prone to play the race card in my life. I just don't believe in making excuses. I accept accountability and responsibility. So I'm very shy and reluctant to make any excuse, especially on racial lines. But I will say that is a disparity and that this industry should become more inclusive, and you're helping, you're assisting to do this business. And, you know, you're this, the, what you just quoted, the information you quoted, 2.7 billion in food trucks. But, my business goes beyond food trucks. We are a concession company as well. We do fairs and festivals and what have you. And what I have learned is that this business, for the most part, has been shielded away from a lot of minorities. When I'm a part of fairs, state fairs, the Texas State Fair, Louisiana State Fair, Four States Fair in Texarkana, Texas, the South Texas State Fair, Colorado Fair, there are very few, if any, African-American vendor owners. And it's a industry that is booming, has been booming. Economically, we have been removed or are not allowed to get in through certain networks. And I'm from the South, so we call it the good old boy networking. A lot of that is still in place. And I'll mention that right now, I've got a festival in my hometown. Now, I've got a following, not only on social media, but just a organic following in my hometown of people that beg, hey, when are you going to be here? And I travel so much that we're invited other places so often that I don't spend a lot of time in my hometown other than downtime. So I look for opportunities when I can bring my home people. That's, you know, where I got my start. And so anyway, this festival, I won't name it, but this festival that's going to take place actually this weekend, I applied for this festival 6 months ago. At the time that I applied, someone reached out to me and suggested that I would be a part of the festival because they needed vendors. They were asking at that point for vendors. So I applied and didn't get a response or anything for a few months. And just a couple of weeks ago, I got a email telling me that, you know, I did make the cut. And which, you know, it hurt me personally a little bit that, you know, okay, I can't get in a festival in my hometown. And we're probably, they had a vote and we were voted, you know, one of the top three food trucks in the region. So, you know, you don't want us. So I waited. I asked the organizers, you know, what's the criteria? How did you, you know, make your decision on which trucks you would allow? And of course, I didn't get a response to that question. So I waited. I asked for the full listing of the vendors that actually were invited before I made any accusations of any race being an issue. I wanted to see, you know, were other minorities included? I knew we don't have an association locally. I have kind of taken it upon myself to get contact information for other food trucks in our area. And so I am in contact with about 7 food trucks in the area, 5 of which are minority owned food trucks. And all of us applied. None of us were accepted. So when the list came out of the food trucks that were listed on their vendor list, there were no minority food trucks. Now, this festival is bringing in the Grambling State University marching band. So they want our minority, our black dollars to support their festival, but they don't want to economically support us by allowing black vendors in their festival. And I think that I have, you know, and I've only been in business 2 years with this food truck, but I have come across this more so than I would like to say that I have in 2019. And it's unfortunate. Of course, it's disguised. So it's not blatant, you know, they don't say, you know, hey, you're black, so, you know, you can't participate. But, you know, they find ways, reasons, a lot of which they economically kind of phase us out, making more regulations, financial burden that hasn't always been in the industry, to kind of weed out as our food truck population is growing, regulatory ways and means are subtracting minority numbers from the business, because we just unfortunately don't have the financial means, or, you know, we don't start with. And, you know, I'm open about my finances. I didn't start out rich. I was a banking executive for 25 years. I retired in 2017, and food has always been my passion. This has always been my retirement plan. But before, in my banking life, I worked with small businesses, and I learned the struggles of small businesses. And now I'm in that category, and I have some of the same struggles that small business owners would tell me about, capital being the first and foremost primary struggle for most minority small businesses is capital, and that's a struggle for us. And we make no complaints about it. We own 100% of our business. I tout that, and I'm proud of that. I could go out and get investors and grow my business faster, but this is something that I'm building, hopefully for a legacy for my family. And I will struggle a little while longer to keep it in the family rather than to allow some outsider to come in and reap the rewards of all of my sweat equity that I've placed into the business. But capital is an issue. And so we've got to open up areas where investors will invest in minority businesses generally, and most specifically for this food truck. It's a growing business. You stated the numbers, and that number is not decreasing. It's increasing each year. So it's a very viable business to invest in if you're an investor.
You know, what stands out to me when you was talking about, you know, the situation with the upcoming festival in your area is that this is not the first time I've heard a story like that. I've heard food trucks say, well, you know, I've been trying to get into this food truck park or this food truck festival for months now. And every time I apply, they always say that, oh, I didn't make the cut for whatever reason. And it's like, it's multiple times they have to apply to the same place over and over again. And when they look, they realize that sometimes they're the only Black food truck that applied and they're still not getting in, even though they'll say, oh, if you just do X, Y, and Z, you'll be better, you know, prepared to get in. And they do all of those things and they still don't get in until maybe like a year or so later, even when they are sometimes the first person to apply, especially in spaces when they say that it's a first come, first serve thing, and they apply the minute it comes out and they still don't get in. You know, you have to wonder about that. You have to wonder even about the regulations, about how much the permits cost. I've seen situations where there have been food trucks that have had to constantly just try their best to keep up with all these different regulations and restrictions that the city or the municipality puts into place, that is often sometimes put in place disproportionately. Yes. Where it's not just African Americans, it's just food trucks and of people of color in general have had this situation. I've been reading a book that came out in 2017. It's called Food Trucks, Cultural Identity and Social Justice. And it's one of the first book, if not the first book, to really position food trucks and race and culture and all these things in conversation with each other. And it was focusing a lot on Mexican American and Latinx food trucks in particular, and how a lot of times these laws, these ordinances, these license fees are set up in such a way where it kind of restricts their opportunity to grow, expand, or even just exist in the food truck industry.
Most definitely. There's definitely a disparity, and I speak on it because I'm just about social justice in all areas, and food trucks may be, you know, in the realm of social injustices. Food trucks may be a little down the, as you know, we've got African American young men and women sometimes that are being killed by officers, law officers, and with no repent or no justice for us. But I'll digress. And yes, there's disparity in the industry. And we're just here knocking down doors. We want to pave a way that the next generation of food truck owners won't have the struggles or all of the struggles that we have. And we do so by talking about it, by, you know, putting it out on Front Street, organizers, telling them, you know, sometimes it maybe it's an inherent, not intentional, but, you know, it's still in place. And so we need to bring that to your, you know, to those people's attention. And then a lot of times I'm in the South again, in the deep South. So, I don't think it's unintentional here, with this particular, organization that operates this festival that I'm speaking of. It's on public land. They do their festival in a public park. So my tax dollars are at work. Use public police officers, just a lot of public resources to put your festival on, yet you're not inclusive of all races in your festival, in the economics of the festival. That's a problem. That's a problem not just here in Shreveport, all over. I've experienced it in Texas, in Mississippi. As I said, you know, from the concession part of the business, doing state fairs and what have you, though, those places are almost impossible to get into. First off, application wise, I mean, you know, and then the financial commitment for the State Fair of Texas, as an example, it's about a $15,000 commitment up front to get in the fair, of which I have to pay that in March. The fair is not until September. So my business has to be able to withstand putting $15,000, you know, that I won't collect on. I won't, you know, get any ROI on until October, until the, you know, the end of the fair. And then at that point, you know, I won't even talk about the percentages that the state fair takes. They increase now to 23.5% on top of the 15. They take 23% of the sales. So it's an expensive business to start out in. But it's not impossible. And I don't want to discourage anyone, but I do want to give the reality of the start.
You blowing my mind on just so many levels. I think I got blown at 15,000. Like, I was thinking you were going to say something like, oh, it's, you know, it's 500, it's 7.
Oh, please. I just paid 500 for a one-day event. Plus 40% of my sales. But, you know, you strategize, and that seems a lot, but, you know, they put me in front of 20,000 people in one day. So, you know, that's...
Is that the $15,000 amount, or is that the $500 event?
No, that's the $500.
Okay, so what does the $15,000 do?
That's about 1 million people.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because I was about to say, if it's $15,000, you need to put me in front of Obama, Michelle.
Yeah, the Texas State Fair is the largest state fair in the country. So I think they get about 1.5 million visitors at that fair over. So I'm not saying that it's not worth the investment, but as I said, there are economic barriers that keep minority businesses out of, and that's, you know, so we as a group have to work on that. You know, are there ways that we can, you know, to be more inclusive of minority businesses? We know what the struggles are, so let's create some programs that will help them get around the barriers so that they can be included in the financial rewards. Businesses that I know of that vend at the Texas State Fair, on the low end, I've got a person that I know, and I won't name his name, but he works 3 weeks a year, makes $250,000, and then sits down. So he pays the same $15,000 that I do. I don't do those type of numbers at that fair, but it can be done. So it's very well worth it. You just have to be able to get in the game in order to play the game. And for a lot of us, getting in the game is a struggle. So we've got to work on how we can get our businesses in the game.
This dude works 3 weeks out of a year and sits down. That was a gospel right there.
and look, so this, you know, this has been, who knew this? Who knew? I mean, you know, how long I've been going to fairs all of my life. And I see we call them carnies in the industry, the people that you know, who, when you go up and buy a popcorn or a cotton candy at the fair, the person that's selling, you know, those are hourly employees. Okay. Mm-hmm. But there's someone, you know, who sits behind the curtain who owns that business. Mm-hmm. And that business that you bought the popcorn from is generating. I mean, you know, I know some vendors that, you know, they do $10,000 in a day, and that's not, you know, just the norm. And so if minorities knew that this kind of economic windfall was out there in the concession business, would we see more minorities going into the concession business? Probably so. But it's been a secret. They've kept it away from us.
Until now. We here. Because we here.
Yeah, we're pulling the curtain back on.
Listen, as much as I love popcorn, it's on the right. I need to start owning something with the popcorn industry.
Right, right, right. And that's what I'm saying, that, you know, even say, you know, me, I do concessions. I've got a concession stand at a NASCAR racetrack, Texas Motor Speedway here in Fort Worth. They reached out to me. They saw my food, as you said on Instagram, they saw my food and they needed Cajun food. And I got an email from a restaurant group saying, hey, you know, we've got this opportunity. We've chosen you. Are you interested? Of course I am. But there were financial barriers that, you know, fortunately I was able to overcome them. But in order for me to operate in the stadium, I had to have $5 million of insurance. Okay, there's a cost for that. Normally, I operate with a $2 million liability policy. I had to up my insurance. So it increased my insurance premium. I had to go to attain workman's compensation, other financial contributions that needed to be made in order for me to operate this concession stand in the stadium that, you know, I didn't already have in place. But, you know, first, giving, you know, honor and thanks to God, I was able to overcome all of the obstacles, and we operate in Texas Motor Speedway. Matter of fact, at the end of this month, if you follow our page, you'll see us located. You know, we post our locations when we are working. So the 28th through the 30th of this month, we'll be at our booth at Texas Motor Speedway. If you're in Texas, please come out and support.
You know, I'm going to definitely make, you know, send me any flyers, anything like that, any posts you make, tag me in them, and I'll be definitely on it when it comes to reposting it, because I want to make sure I support as many food trucks as possible, especially those that are owned by people of color. So just tag me in it, and I'll get the word out.
Gotcha. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. What I want to do real quick is, I know we talked earlier about you got into the food truck industry about 2 years ago, and that you worked as a banker for over 20 years, and that this was always a plan for you. Like, you always was going to do cooking after you retired. So what is this, the passion, where did the passion for cooking come from for you?
I'm glad that you asked that, and I laugh because this is my favorite part of my story.
Ooh, tell me.
That I love to share.
I got my feet kicked up and I'm ready.
All right. So, my grandmother, just to just cut it short, my grandmother is the fire, the source of my passion. She had 10 children. My mother being one of 10, 5 girls and 5 boys. And in the summertime, the grandkids, would always, we always went to grandma. And I hadn't always lived in Louisiana. My mom explored her corporate career. It took her places. So we lived in Texas. We lived in Kansas City, Missouri, and what have you. So, but in the summer, I always look forward to being able to spend the summer month down in Louisiana with my grandmother. And my grandmother is from a small town in East Texas called Jefferson, Texas. And one generation removed from slavery. Mm-hmm. And I say that to say that she was a resourceful woman, as you might imagine one would have to be with not much income and 10 children. So cooking is something that I saw her do as a kid. I woke up every morning to homemade biscuits from scratch. Nothing that my grandmother ever cooked came out of packages. We grew it or we raised it. If it was meat, we had cows, we had pigs, we had chickens. If it was a vegetable, you could look out the back window and watch it grow. My hard work on a tiller all summer, plowed the garden, planted the seeds, pulled weeds, pulled the crop once it was sold. Food has been ingrained in me. The raising of food, the preparation of food, and the enjoying of eating food is it's part of the fabric of who I am. And that's all that started with my grandmother Effie. So as a young child, I would just spend hours in the kitchen watching her work. Not because I love cooking so much, but because I love my grandmother and just being around my grandmother. So if she was cooking, I was just there at her knee watching. And I didn't know I was learning anything at the time. I wasn't in class, or, she wasn't, going step by step. Well, baby, this is what we do. And, none of that. So I didn't get taught that way. My cooking is truly a gift that comes from my passion, or the love of my grandmother and her love of cooking, and my passion developed through watching her do so daily. And so now, we cook from the, I call it cooking from the heart. I don't operate on recipes. I have no recipes written down. I couldn't pass a recipe down to the next generation if I wanted to, because I don't write anything as far as recipes go. Everything, if I decide that I want to do ossobuco, then, I know I've had it in upscale restaurants, and that's, part of my life has been great. My former career has taken me places. I've eaten in most any 5-star restaurant I ever could dream of eating in. So I've experienced food at the highest cost and, at the lowest. And, 5 stars doesn't always mean that it's the best food. It's the most expensive, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that it's the best. You can go to a 1-star. That's just about the cost of the food, but the food may be,
that's right.
At the 1-star place. I've experienced a lot of food, and in doing so, that I was researching to, and so I cook from taste. I've had, whatever dish, oxtails. I've gone to Jamaica and had oxtails. I've seen them, how authentically they're prepared in the Caribbean. And I don't ask for a recipe. I just eat the food. And from eating the food, I can taste the seasoning, the ingredients, And I come back into my kitchen when I'm back in the United States and I play with it. I go buy oxtails. I buy what I think I taste and I play around with it until I get to the taste that I'm seeking. That's how all of our dishes are. As I said, we don't operate from recipes. So, I see other people and, you know, they have cookbooks and they share recipes and sell them online and what have you. Yeah, I unfortunately won't be able to do that because I couldn't tell. Now, I can tell you, you know, if you ask me, okay, you know, DeAndre, you got a good, you know, buttercream sauce. How do you prepare it? Then I can tell you, okay, start with some cream cheese, some heavy whipping cream, get some real butter, unsalted. You know, I can, you know, I tell you what I do, but it's not written down. It's all, you know, in my head, and I, you know, prepare, as I said, just from my heart. And we pass that on, the love that we put into the food, into cooking the food and preparing the food. We share that in the delivery, and you'll taste the love in the food.
So I'm going to ask two questions. The first question is, what is your most popular dish? And then the second question, since you cook from the heart, is there one that's kind of your favorite to prepare?
All right. So the most popular dish that right now, I would say, and we're on our Texas swing, and before I ever had a food truck, I had a smoker built, a barbecue smoker on a trailer built. That was what I was gonna, you know, smoke meat and stand on the corner and sell food in my spare time after, you know, working at the bank 8 hours. I was gonna be, and so I had the smoker built. I decided I didn't like standing on the corner waiting on a customer to come buy food, so had the smoker. So I started entering barbecue competitions on a professional level. So I do competition barbecue, and pretty successful at it. I've got a lot of trophies for my barbecue, and so from that, I will say that we do a brisket, a Texas brisket, that I can't keep on my truck. This weekend, we did the one-day event I told you about. I went through 200 pounds of brisket in about 6 hours.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, so that's about a half a cow that we delivered. And so the brisket, this dish, we do a lot of things with brisket on our truck. And again, that goes back to, you know, when I started talking about my grandmother, I talked about her resourcefulness. And purposely I did that because we are resourceful and, you know, we probably genetically in us to be resourceful. We have to be resourceful. So this particular dish that we do with the brisket is a brisket grilled cheese sandwich.
Okay, now.
And it's, you know, that brisket grilled cheese, I can't keep it on the truck. You know, we aren't your average food truck. And when I say your average food truck, what I mean by that is, making dollars is ultimately the goal, but we don't make dollars over the quality of the food that we put out. And so what that means to our guests is that, we buy top of the line ingredients to go into our dishes. So I could, you know, do a, you know, $1 cheese on, but I buy aged Gouda cheese.
Ooh, okay.
Myself.
I love me some Gouda.
So, right. So there are some, I mean, a little gourmet, and you know, my moniker is the street gourmet. Dre Z, the street gourmet, is the chef name, and it's because I don't cut corners in the ingredients. I buy Angus select or above brisket, so I could pay $2 a pound for brisket, but I pay $5 a pound because it's a better cut of meat.
Mm.
And yeah, you know, could I lower my food costs, I could, you know, if it was just about numbers. But with us, it's not just about numbers. As I say, I like to see the smile on my customers' faces. And especially if I can sit in a place at a fair, if we open up on a Monday, this is the experience that we have. And I think it goes to, what we're doing. If a person has our food on a Monday and we're there for a week, that person probably comes back five times in the week that we're there for our food. We get that all the time at places that we go, where we see the same face repeatedly for the entire duration from the first time that they had it. So if they had it on Tuesday and we don't leave till next Wednesday, they are there every day until Wednesday when we're gone. And that's a testament to the food and the preparation of the food, the ingredients of the food. That, you know, we don't cut corners. We do buy the best of ingredients that's available. We source locally whenever possible. We are green minded. So, you know, we monitor our impact on the environment. So we're very socially conscious. And, you know, all of that in the small business, I think, appeals to our clientele once they learn about our food truck and experience the food. And, what we're trying to do is to build a loyal following, we are beyond a food truck. We are a food truck today, but we're definitely not limited to being a food truck. We're also a catering company. We're a concession company, and, franchises will be available soon. I'm claiming that in the name of Jesus. We're part of the food truck movement, but we're moving beyond being just a food truck. And, that's part of the business model that we're employing. And so you mentioned Purdue in West Lafayette. I'm familiar. My best friend is in Indiana. And, I'm just looking for a partner in a few places, and Raging Cajun will have a truck in those locations, particularly Austin, Texas, Houston, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Phoenix, Arizona. Within the next 2 years, we'll have trucks in those locations, whether they be 100% company owned trucks or partner trucks with investors. That's what we're going to.
Well, first of all, let me say I stand in agreement with you. We are going to claim that, and we're going to speak that into existence, because Ariel needs some food. I need it in Indiana. And what's crazy is that I'm really thinking about, you know, maybe moving to Texas after I finish this degree, see what's happening over there. So, yeah, go ahead. Put you some food trucks over there in Texas.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of opportunity in Texas, and we haven't officially announced it, but I'll tell you that we are, if you will, relocating, or the truck will actually be in Texas, even though, you know, we are an authentic Louisiana kitchen, but the truck will actually be residing in Texas soon, just because I do so much business in the state of Texas, between Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, that the travel, the cost of travel. So if I, you know, I'm in Louisiana, but if I do three jobs in Texas this week, each time I've got to drive to Texas to do that business. And we're getting so much business from Texas that it just makes economical sense that, we locate trucks in Texas to accommodate the business needs that we're gaining there in Texas. So we're working right now. We just got, speaking of food truck parts. So, there's this food truck park that just, that sprouted in Houston in the Galleria area. And it seemed like a, you know, great location. And so we applied and we were denied. And, now they just listed that they've got two spaces available for one 12-month lease. So I've inquired, waiting to hear back. So hopefully prayerfully, not hopefully, prayerfully, this will work itself out, and we'll place a truck in Houston, and we'll be excited about that. As I've got a few friends, and I say friends lightly, through this business. I'm all about supporting. It's not, you know, even other food trucks, other restaurants, it's not a competition, you know, and I'm going to say we all Black folks. Now, I mean, you know, I understand that your audience may be beyond African-Americans, but for the sake of this conversation, I'm going to say that we're all Black folks. And we don't have to compete amongst one another. There's enough pie, if you will, that we can share. We can support one another and build each other up to attain our own piece of the pie. So that's what I'm about. So any business I support, but especially minority owned African American businesses, I'm all in, 10 toes down with them. So, you know, I post other people's postings, you know, if they ask, or in whatever way I can support someone else's business, if, you know, if it's feedback that they're looking for, if they feel that I have some expertise that they're short on, whatever, I'm there for them. So I say that to say that there's in Houston, Lynn and Kia, the owners of the Turkey Leg Hut, I'm sure you've probably heard of them. Yeah, they're pretty popular. So that business, I mean, it's booming, and I see how Houstonians support businesses, Crab Queens of Houston, Turkey Leg Hut, and there's a few more that I can name. And I just, you know, I look and see that these people, and as an example, the Slutty Vegan, and I think you're probably familiar with Slutty Vegan as well, they just did a pop-up in Houston for a day. And they're popular everywhere, so, you know, it may be an anomaly. It's not an anomaly, I should say. But, man, their lines were ridiculous in Houston. And you know, it's amazing that, you know, she's built a brand that can go to, you know, places that we look at other businesses, and I have no qualms, or, you know, if I see a best practice somewhere, you better believe I'm stealing it. And I'll tell you, you know, hey, I borrowed this from you. You know, I'll give you the credit. You know, I've gotten some things from Turkey Leg Hut. I tell Lynn and Kia, hey, you know, this is you. I'm not stepping on your toes at all. I'm not even in your space. But, you know, I watch what you've done. I see, you know, the successes and, you know, the best practices. And I, you know, pull that from you and employ that in my business. Same with Slutty Vegan. You know, I see some best practices. And likewise, we should support one another. None of us have made it. No matter how much or how successful we may look, we ain't there. So support one another. Let's build each other up. Let's run this.
And you know, the support thing is something that's really powerful, because I think I said it. I was at a food truck conference last weekend in Ohio. And for the most part, it was, you know, predominantly white. I think it was maybe 5 Black people there. And only 2 that I can think of were food truck owners.
Typical.
Yep. And so I went to provide education for myself, because I'm the type of person that for academia, the food truck scholar means that I'm putting out articles, I'm writing my dissertation, I'm going to conferences. But to food truck owners, for some of them, the food truck scholar means, hey, I may have a question about where can I go for this? Can you help me with that? And so for me, it is about, okay, how am I educating myself where I am useful, not just to my peers and my colleagues, but I'm actually useful to the people that I say I'm trying to promote and support. So I went to that conference, and it was teaching about social media. It was teaching about setting up your business and doing your taxes and things to look out for. Should you run year round or not? What are some of the pitfalls if you are in the Midwest and you have this type of weather, all that type of stuff. And one of the things that really stood out to me was how many times some of the food truck owners would say, well, you know, the way I figured out some of the things to look out for is I reached out to existing food truck and said, hey, can I volunteer to work on your truck for a week? And they would get on this person's truck, work for them for free for a week and say, okay, they place their plates here and it makes it easy for them to access everything. It cuts time down. Or, okay, they didn't have this. They bought a used food truck. It doesn't really meet all of the specification that they need for the type of stuff that they do. So I probably need to buy a food truck and have it built from the ground up so it can match everything that I need to have. And so by the time they got their own food truck, they already came in with this experience of I've been on a truck before. And so I may not know everything that is to come, but I do have an idea of what to look for. And they were encouraging other people to say, hey, ask if you can volunteer on somebody's truck. Ask if you can help them with social media. So they actually, in Ohio, what I never thought of before is that sometimes they even share employees. So it's not uncommon for you to see an employee work for one truck and then work for the other truck. But they also have an understanding of if that's the person that primarily hired you, then sometimes that's the person that is your priority. But it opened my mind into how collaborations can and do work within the food truck industry.
All of that sounds great. I wish that I had thought of, I was going to say if it was available, but it probably was. I just didn't, you know, I didn't know any food truck owners that would allow me to work on their truck. To learn. That sounds like a great idea. So, you know, if there's any people out there wanting to work for free, please come find me. I'll, you know, share all of my ideas and, you know, you can watch the operation, no problem. The free labor is great. that really is a great idea. That's not the path that I took. And, you know, so a lot of my, there are lessons and, you know, a lot of them are bought lessons and you got some taught lessons, but, the bought lessons are the ones that impact you financially. Now, those are the ones that you've got to be a student and astute enough to understand and recognize the lesson, learn from it the first time so that you don't have to repeat it. And so, because those lessons are the ones that can sink your business. As an example, starting out, you know, I didn't even, you know, where do you get your, how do you determine what your menu is? You know, that, you know, is it written somewhere? Probably is. I didn't find it, but so I can't even, you know, really, tell you. I came up with some dishes that I thought would sell to the group that I was going to be before. Okay. So the first ever event that I did with my truck was actually a state fair. And it was in Texarkana, which is a city that is within two states. It's in Texas and Arkansas. And so considering the demographic of where I was serving and the type of event at fairs, it's a little different than regular food trucking. You know, as a food truck, you know, you probably serve, you know, plates, you know, lunches, you know, full lunch, you know, where you'll get, you know, fried pork chops, rice and gravy and a vegetable and a roll and, you know, whatever. Whereas at a festival or a fair, the patrons are walking around. So they don't want to have both hands tied up with whatever food item it is. So you've got to create one hand item. And that's something that no one taught me that I didn't know. So when at my first event, I came with plates, you know, I'm thinking that, hey, you know, Over here, you can get a hot dog, but over here, you can get a full meal. Who wouldn't want a full meal for the same, you know, roughly the same dollar amount, you know, that you would think. But at the event, at the fair, you don't want the full meal. You just want, you know, so I developed a waffle cone full of chicken bites. So that's my chicken and waffle cone. And I drizzle them. And, you know, but those are some things that I learned. You know, there were some mistakes made that cost me, and, you know, I didn't make the sales, and, you know, those are the bought lessons that I'm speaking of. I didn't go through three fairs before I realized, hey, you'd sell more if you'd have a one, you know, it only took me that one fair before I was like, okay, this is not the menu for the fairs. Okay, we'll do this menu other places, but at fairs and festivals, we need to come up with some menu items that are appropriate for the event. So that was, you know, that's something that I learned. I operated a catering company before the food truck, so I had a little knowledge, again, self-taught, self-learned knowledge about portion sizes and food costs and what have you. But there, all of these are factors that go into running a successful business. You need to know to the T what a dish costs you going out the window. Most people are not into the analytic of the business, but the most successful ones are the ones who have the analytics down. And when I say the analytics, not only, you know, so just as an example, you asked me about my most popular dish. I told you at this time it's the brisket grilled cheese. Okay. I sell everything on my truck purposely. It's $10. Nothing is above $10 on my truck. Now you can catch me at some event, more just as an example, I'll be at a jazz festival in Florida. It's a, you know, kind of an upscale, jazz festival. And, the cost of admission, meaning my cost to be there and what it's costing me, I have to increase my prices. So whereas items normally are $15 on my truck, they'll be $15 at this event just to accommodate, to be able to pay for my space for being there. Okay. But it's the same item. But to go back to the brisket grilled cheese, that brisket grilled cheese cost me about $3.50 to produce out my window.
You know, I'm listening to you talk about analytics, and I'm realizing how important that is for a food truck owner to not only know, hey, I'm thinking about this price, but how much is everything going to cost me, and how much is that unit cost going to be per item? And so I'm thinking about how the skills you gained by being a banking executive has prepared you for that. So could you talk a little bit more about how your 22 years in banking prepared you for Raging Cajun Food Truck?
Well, my prior experience and my prior career has definitely helped me in this business, in a few aspects, but I'll share a couple with you. First off, my title, at the bank was VP of operations. And, so what that entailed is I ran the operations of 9 retail bank branches, in 2 states, the human resources, I mean, every aspect of the business came through my desk. So I've operated a business for someone else. So when it came to operating my business, I already had the hands-on experience in doing so. So I handled compliance for the bank, which helps me with the regulatory compliance that's necessary for permitting in different counties that I operate in, or states that I operate in, cities that I operate in. All of that aspect, the finances, the dealing with numbers, reports, being able to generate reports, knowing what information is critical in a report that is necessary, and knowing how to incorporate that information into the report to generate the reports that's necessary to, in order that can be effective for my business. All of those aspects come from my experience in banking and the years of experience that I have in banking. Most definitely, it's been beneficial for me in that regard. the controls and handling of money on the truck. We are primarily a cash business. We do take cars as well, but about, depending on the event, but probably about 65 to 70% of all of our transactions are cash transactions, which means, you know, there's a security, there's security issues. And being in banking all of those years, I'm familiar with the security issues and the checks and balances that are in place to mitigate risk involved with those issues. So we employ those on the truck. When we leave at night, as an example, at the bank, when we close the bank, we always had multiple people to close the bank. No one walked out of the bank alone. Employ those same strategies at the food truck. When we, you know, leave the food, an event, we're closing down. If there were a bad person watching, you know, they sit here and watch you 4 hours collect, you know, however many dollars in cash. So they know that that money is there on the truck. So if you are a person, you know, out to do bad things, then, you know, you can wait and lurch and wait on, you know, an individual to come off the truck. But, we come out in pairs, and of course, you know, we're armed as well. But yeah, so there are just all kind of benefits that we employ from my experience into the food truck that helped us to be successful. If I'm at a state fair, it's not so much an issue, but if I am, you know, at a business that I, you know, rented a space from for a few hours that where I set up and sold, and, you know, it's just open to anyone to walk up, then, you know, of course, you know, caution has to be in place. And so you got to know your surroundings, be very cognizant of your surroundings and of your environment, and operate accordingly.
So I guess what my follow-up question would be is, in terms of business planning, has being a banker, has it helped you to avoid some of the common mistakes you've seen entrepreneurs make, especially those who are entrepreneurs of color? Or have you been able to at least identify the problems if you weren't able to avoid them?
Well, I shared with you before, through the bank, we actually had a small business incubator at our bank, which brought me in contact, and I dealt personally with minority small business owners. So I will say that the biggest mistake, or the what I help through the bank, what I help minority business owners with the most, and you'd be surprised maybe, is a business plan. Most of us operate without a business plan. And if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So that would be the biggest piece that I would say that, you know, minority business owners, we jump in because we, you know, I got a lump sum of money and I want to do something. I want to start my own business, and I bought a food truck and I know I can cook because somebody told me my food was good. So I bought the food truck and I'm ready to cook. Okay. Who's your customer base? How are you going to reach your customer? So there are questions that, you know, the plan, if you had written one, would help you to figure out. And without the plan, you know, you're kind of just in a deep ocean trying not to drown.
You know, I don't think the business plan could be emphasized enough. So for some people who get overwhelmed and like, oh, I don't know where to start, one of the great things to do is start with a business model canvas. Sometimes it's called a lean model canvas. It's basically a business plan on one sheet of paper. And if you can feel that out, you can then stretch it out and complete the full business plan. I'm actually going to revise mine this summer because I want to make sure that the target audience I said I was going to do when I first started this is, in fact, you know, the target audience that I am actually reaching right now.
Well, definitely. I was the mediator in between the business owner. And so I would place business owners established businesses that are operating. I mean, not startups. These businesses that would come to the incubator are already operating. And then I would ask them questions like, okay, well, let me see your business plan. And then I get a look. And, you know, after three or four of them, I just realized that, okay, when I ask this question, it's like it's a stump. Like I'm stumping them because they don't have it. So I reached out to, as I told you before, for another question, we've got a local university, which means there are students at the university. And again, we talked about resourcefulness and utilizing resources. So there are students like yourself. They're, you know, attaining degrees. They've got research to do. So I started placing students with business owners. And they began to collaborate on writing business plans for small business owners who were already operating. They just didn't have a plan. And without a plan, so what happens is the bigger picture is this right here. So of course, I'm at the bank. So the reason that they are even participating in our program is because they are seeking capital. In order for them to attain the capital, we put them through this obstacle course, if you will, not intentionally, but we are taking your business from a place that banks can't lend to you because you don't qualify as a business for a bank to lend to you, even if they wanted to, and bringing them to a space to where now you've got all of the criteria that's necessary that you can walk into not only my bank, but any bank and present your business to them in a way that now your business is investable. They're able to lend capital to your business. So you've got a business plan. You've got the insurances. You've got, you know, contracts, what have you. A lot of the businesses were construction companies or what have you, and they're looking to get in business, do business with the state, but they don't have the insurance that's necessary in order to bid on the contract. They don't have the capital on hold that's required in order to bid on a $5 million contract. You've got to have resources that has to, you know, be able to be presented to say that you can afford to do this contract. So a lot of obstacles that were presented to small business owners, we helped them to overcome those obstacles through this program. So, but business plan and capital being one of the two of the most foremost things that I saw that were lacking in a lot of minority small business.
And not only is it enough to be prepared and have a business plan, but make sure that it is a thorough one. A lot of people say the best business plan is a done business plan. No, the best business plan is a thoroughly done business plan.
And after so long, you know, even if you have a business plan, like right now, as I said, we are going into our second year of operation as the food truck. And I was just speaking with my mother last night, and we are going into do an assessment on my original business plan. You have to assess yourself, okay? How effective have we been in incorporating the plan? What's worked? What hasn't? You know, what do we need to change? We need to modify parts of the plan, you know, what haven't. So right now, we're beginning to do our business plan assessment to, and, you know, we'll see where that leads us, but, you have to take a look at yourself.
That's critical for people to know, because one of the lessons I had to learn was that the business plan doesn't just sit on your desk. It is an actual living document.
It's a living document.
Exactly. And it is something that ebbs and flows with your business. So it's something that can help you, you know, redirect yourself if you're off course, or you can change your trajectory if you like it through the business plan, or it'll let you know that, hey, you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
That's I couldn't describe it that well, but yes.
Yeah, so I hate to bust a lot of bubbles, but, you know, you'll never, ever really be done with your business plan.
Yeah, it's never done. It shouldn't be done. Yeah.
And, you know, I think once people understand that the business plan can actually be more freeing than daunting, you get to add, you get to subtract, you get to say, you know, yeah, this fits with what I want to do, or actually, no, it doesn't. And I actually like the changes that this new trajectory has me on. So how do I chart my course to go towards that? So it's actually a lot more freeing than one would think.
And you need to know, are you heading in the direction that you intended to go in? Wouldn't it be nice to find that out a year in rather than 10 years in? What if you didn't look, you know, if you waited 10 years to find out, oh, well, my business plan said I wanted to go this route, but we're way over here. We're way off course, you know, and we're 10 years. How long, you know, if you steer a ship off course for 10 years, how long does it take you to get back on course? Whereas opposed to if you were only off course for 6 months, but you reviewed it, you're not that far off course. So you can, you know, steer back and get in the pattern where you need to be. In a past life, I was a mentor for a lot of youth. And, you know, so that's where that comes from. You know, you placed it exactly that we do have to review, you know, ourselves and, you know, what are our goals? You know, am I on course to achieve, you know, write them down. Don't be, you know, don't keep it in your head. And I was a victim of that. Just, you know, I just keep things in my head and I operate that way. But, if, you know, have the courage to put them on paper. Because when you put it on paper, not only, you know, when you keep a goal or a dream in your head, 9 times out of 10, that's where it stays. But when you put it on paper, and what I do is, and that's why I share with you my plan. You know, I could have taken the road that, okay, you know, I'm going to protect my model. I don't want anyone to steal what I plan to do with, you know, not that it hadn't been done before, but I don't want anyone to take my idea and run with it or, you know, attain it before I do, because they're financial. If I had $150,000 right now, I could place a truck in the locations where I'm telling you and they would be successful. Because of the plan that's in place and me working the plan and being on course where my plan is. My obstacle is I don't have the capital yet. So I have drummed the business up. I've got people in Austin that know the Raging Cajun brand, that have an expectation of what the food is at Raging Cajun. So when Raging Cajun shows up in Austin, they already know. I just don't have the means to put a truck in Austin yet full time, but it's coming. It's coming. But I say all that to say that just you have to know where you're going, where you are, where you want to be, and where you're trying to go to. And those are things that, you know, in mentoring, I have learned as a mentee. And as I became, you know, once I became a mentor to others, you know, pass that on to them. So I write things, I write my goals down. I share it with you that, you know, yeah, this is going to be a franchise. That's the goal. And what that does, it, you know, because if I keep that idea in my head, there's no pressure on me really other than internal to, you know, accomplish that. But if I tell you and make that public, guess what? Now, okay, I put something out there. My word means a lot to me. I've got to honor that. So I've got to take the steps, do the work, make the commitment that it takes to attain and accomplish that goal. And I'm committed to that.
One of the things I have appreciated about you, you know, during our interview has been the vision that you have for Raging Cajun. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that it is going to be successful for the sole fact that, you know, you're committed to doing it, not just for you, but for so many people, especially your family.
I thank you. We are a multi-million dollar company. Not today, but we are a multi-million dollar company. And if you get on board, follow us at Raging Cajun LA, RAGINCAJUNLA on Instagram or Facebook. Become a part of the movement. Support us. Support your local food trucks, your minority, your entrepreneurs. One more thing before you go, and I wanted to get this out, and you know, that And when I say I support, the people that's cooking out their kitchen, selling plates on the street, look, I support them people. I know, your hustle, I understand. You got to do what you got to do until you can get to where you want to be. And so if it means you selling plates out your kitchen right now to get your brand out there and you putting it on social media, look, all of that works. Utilize the tools that are available to you to get in the game. Don't make excuses for, you know, why you can't get in the game. Find your way in. Get in. Commit. Work hard. You said you're going to ask me about, you know, what I would share to anybody looking at what I would tell anyone. First off, if you are opposed to working hard, don't do it. People look at me that know me. As I said, I was a bank executive. I wore suits and ties, very expensive suits and ties and shoes, drove expensive cars. As you can imagine, as a bank executive, you know, earned. That was me. So when people now come and see me sweating in a t-shirt on a food truck cooking, they think I'm crazy. How could you go from your cush office job to operating a measly food truck? But what I'll say to that person is that's the person that lacks vision. See, I made a lot of millions of dollars for other people. And now I'm just out to get mine. So if it means that I got to cook on this measly food truck for right now that's not, you know, a long-term plan, but until I have employees that are trained, that are going to carry out the expectation that I have of my food to deliver to my customers, then I'll be there cooking every meal that any customer gets off any truck that says Reagan Cajun. That's my commitment. Look, my grandfather was a wise man with only a sixth grade education, but he first off, he made us go to school. He told us that what we needed to be successful in life was in books. So he made sure that school was something that we went to, we attained degrees. And I thank him to this day for that. But what he told me was, you find something, and then, you know, this, of course, is an old cliche, but you find something that you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life. And cooking is something that I love to do. And entrepreneurship is in my DNA. And those are two separate things, but they collaborate to bring you the Raging Cajun Louisiana Kitchen food truck.
So I got to ask, what would you tell someone who is afraid to walk away from their career and launch their dreams like you did? What would you say?
Look, I'll share this with you, and I'm getting personal, but if it touches one person, then, you know, I've done. And it's not about material things. As I told you, what my previous career was, and which it afforded me some of the, you know, I stayed in some of the nicest hotels, 5-star, the nicest home, cars, you know, Mercedes, Bentley, I've had it. I don't have it today because I walked away from it. Chase my dream. So somebody could say, well, why? How could you, you know, so they look at me, you know, right now I ride around in a beat up car that's way, you know, that someone outside, you know, from knowing, if you've known me the last 25 years, you know, you've only seen me ride around in New Farms because that's, you know, where my life was. That was my lifestyle. I sacrificed that, humbled myself, because I knew what my bigger vision was. And I could have stayed, continued to work corporate, you know, and earn a 6-figure salary if that's all that I thought I was worth.
Oh, now, DeAndre, hold up. Pause, 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 pause. You got to bring that back. You got to say that again.
I said I could have kept earning that 6-figure salary if that was all that I thought I was worth.
Wow.
I walked away. People don't understand how, why. I can't even tell them, you know, I don't care to tell them, look, if you're not here to pay this electric bill, I don't owe you any explanation. Just as long as they continue to get paid, my kids all right. The story will tell itself later on, whether I'm here to tell it or my kids get to tell it. But they'll tell you, my dad himself, for the good of our entire family. So now we've got generational wealth because he walked away from his individual wealth.
Well, look, I'm out of time, but I'm definitely not out of material. Once again, thank you for kicking it with me for another episode of the Food Truck Scholar Podcast. If you are a food truck owner that would like to be a guest or a listener that has suggestions for a food truck I should try, email me at Ariel, that's A-R-I-E-L, at thefoodtruckscholar.com. And make sure you follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as The Food Truck Scholar to stay up to date on the latest in the food truck world. I'm your host, Ariel D. Smith, signing off and reminding you to eat local, buy local, and support your local food truck owners. I'll see you next week.